And away we go. It is a Friday morning, February the 12th, 2021, 16 minutes past the hour. You are tuned into the Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of community Christian fellowship. And now we turn it over to our host, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you?
Good to be joining you this morning. I'm here again with Tim Steele joining on my side of the table.
Hi, everybody.
And I would like to remind everyone that we are also sponsored by Jeff's Bicycle Shop in Prospect, Ohio, and Mid-Ohio Insurance Solutions. So get that stuff out of the way. We are at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Love to have you guys come and visit sometime. Right now, during our pandemic times, we have a first service at 9:30 and a second service at 11 o'clock. And our 9:30 service is primarily for those that feel that they are possibly immune compromised and want to space out just a little bit. But it's good to be here today, and it's good that God has the church continuing to do his work.
Just a reminder, I mean, you may want to call ahead for the 9:30 service, because if it's getting as cold as what they're talking, we may cancel 9:30 service.
Tomorrow. Or Sunday.
Sunday. For this coming Sunday.
This coming Sunday alone, because it's supposed to get really frigid in the morning, and we may not do that one. So we will let you know. I'll put a note out here on the Pastor Spot if you're watching this, because it is streaming live, actually, right now on the Pastor Spot Facebook page. I'm going to read something this morning. It says in Matthew chapter 5, now, see, I lost my place. Can you believe that?
Yes.
Sure, exactly. I'm sorry. Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, it says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt should lose its taste, how can it be made salty? It's no longer good for anything but to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city situated on a hill cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and puts it under a basket, but rather on a lampstand, and gives it light for all who are in the house. In the same way, let your light so shine before others, so they may see your good works and give glory to your Father which is in heaven." And you know, that verse talks about basically that we have good news. We have love for other people. We need to show God's love. We need to show what God says to infiltrate everywhere in society. But if we ourselves lose that ability to love, to care, to share, what good are we? How do we get the flavor back? And what I wanted to go to a little bit, I've got in the front of this this is called a what is that called? Well, anyway, it's just a small New Testament. You know, it's called the Share Jesus Without Fear New Testament. Some of you may be familiar with it. It's a pretty good little testament to have. It directs you to a lot of passages that makes it easy to share the word. But I wrote something in the front of it, and it goes along with this. It says, rather than being consumed with your problems, be consumed with the joy of what God is doing with you through them. What a novel idea. You know, we can be caught up in our problems, but God works through our difficulties, does he not?
Yes, he does.
Tim, I'll ask you, have you ever gone through a time where, because of very difficult circumstances, you actually grew in your closeness with the Lord, or you got better? Give me an example of something like that that would come to your mind.
Yeah, I can give you a real example. It's when I went through my divorce.
Uh-huh.
It brought me so much closer, because I depended upon him, his word, and my brothers and sisters at church to help me get through all this stuff. So, yeah.
Which brings up another important point. You can't have those people at church to help you get through those things if you don't attend and if you're not there. And I've often said that's one of the huge parts of belonging to a church and having a congregation that cares about you, and being also, I would say, in a setting where it's conducive to that.
Yes.
And one of the things we see today in our churches, we see a lot of big, I don't want to sound derogatory and use the word entertainment, but we see a lot of production type things on Sunday morning, and people that will go for that exciting production time or what's being on stage that day. And what you miss there a lot of times is you miss that personal one-on-one with people, where they know you intimately and, yes. And know everything about you because they spend time with you and they see it. I've said this many times that in our congregation, I can look out over the congregation, and every person sitting out there, I know of a specific thing that I could probably be praying for them about and lifting up to the Lord. The reason is because I know them, and they feel safe with me, and I think that's the way it should be.
Yes.
I think a lot of times when we go to large venues where you come, you listen, and you go, you miss that personal one-on-one. And I know there's other ways to get to that and have that within a large venue, but it doesn't always happen there. And it's nice to it was really funny when we were away from the church for the brief time that we were shut down when the pandemic first started. I know people were just saying to me, I just need to be back in church and see my fellow believers and my church family. I need that. And I think people have really needed that. There's that connection that needs done. But, you know, that statement I just made about you know, find joy in those difficulties because you grow in those difficulties. Don't be consumed by everything around you that's wrong. Be consumed by what's good. You know, everything seems to have a relevance, Scott, depending on the situation. If I'm in a river and I'm drowning and I know I'm going to drown, the last thing I'm going to worry about is what's in the refrigerator for dinner that night. But if I'm not in the river drowning, that might be bothering me that I don't have anything in the refrigerator to eat. Same person, same time frame, everything, just a different circumstance. And we have a tendency to really dwell and be affected by the things that are pertinent in front of us at the minute. But I think that if we take, and it's like Scripture says, if we take those things and we know that, you know what, I'm going through this for a reason. And I talk to people sometimes, they'll say, Pastor, I've been praying and I've been asking God to do this and to change this or to fix this situation, and it just hasn't happened. And I have to tell them that, you know, God's going to do things the best way and in His way. A lot of the things you'll find that are fixed in a way that you never could have imagined would happen, a wonderful way, is something that's going to take time to play out. Is something that's going to be more permanent. I was talking to someone yesterday about a relationship, and they'd been praying to God for this relationship to get better. Well, there were some situations around that relationship that even if they had a moment's truce where they feel like, oh, God answered my prayer, you know, we were getting along, we were talking fine, we agreed to clear the air, those other things are still in the background that are going to be affecting that situation, and it may be short-lived. What you want to see is the root of the problem taken care of, and then that relationship can come back and thrive. And I think God works that way many times in our lives, that what we think we want is a short-term, I want to feel it now fix, where God's going to give us a long-term. And that can be financial. You know, some people say, well, I just had $1,000. I could get over this hump. But what if you didn't get the $1,000, but through the fact that you didn't, it allowed you to really concentrate on what you were doing or shouldn't be doing or things you might not need or that were pulling your finances away. And the long-term effect seemed to be, hey, I've got more money than I ever did because I'm being more wise with it. You see what I mean? Whereas if you just give them the $1,000, a week later there'd have been, man, I'm broke, I'm in a mess, I need another $1,000. It's that same kind of thing. It's like with our health many times. Someone gets through a health crisis, but did they then go back and say, you know what, I need to pay attention to the overall picture and come back and take care of my health so this doesn't happen down the road? Or do we just go from one crisis to the next? And we do that in relationships. We do that in all kinds of things. A lot of times you'll see families and churches that will, we call them church hoppers. And they'll go to a church and they'll really get involved and really like it. Oh, this is just, and they'll tell you, man, this is wonderful. We're so glad that we're here. And 2 months later, they're dissatisfied and going somewhere else. And it's because they didn't put roots down. And they didn't realize that once you are a cog in a wheel, you may be one cog in a wheel that has 300 cogs on it, but you're an important part of that wheel. And you need to realize that and stay in place and work through many problems. If you don't, and you're always looking for what's going to make you feel that good in that minute, you're going to miss a lot of great blessings as you jump along, because you're not going to stay at the next place very long either. Someone's either going to offend you because they didn't ask you to do something, or they ask you to do too much, or the pastor said something that day that really hit you wrong, and you know, whatever the case may be. And people say, well, I'll go to somewhere where my ears are tickled a little better. And then they get there, and boy, this sounds great. This is just what I want to hear. And a week or two later, bingo, it happens again. So I think a lot of these things are in play, but it's our reaction to them and what we do with them and how people are going to look at that. Tim, I'll ask you this question since you brought up your divorce. Your divorce has been final for a long time now. How many years do you even know off the top of your head?
Coming up on seven okay. And a half.
So it's kind of neat that you took a second to answer that, and I'll tell you why. Because it's not at the forefront of your mind. If you hadn't gotten through that and moved on to where you are now, you could have probably told me down to the day just how long it had been. You see what I mean? But the truth is, you've moved on. God's brought a wonderful woman into your life. You have a wonderful wife and a great relationship. And that happens with that patience and trusting God and walking through doors when you know they're the right door to go through. And waiting in God's timing and not always our own. We have to understand that it's far greater if we watch God's timing and do what we're supposed to do. And following Him always works out better.
Yep.
In all ways. I know I look at my own personal situation and where I am today, and I look at the wonderful family that God's given me. My own biological family and everything about us, and I look at that and I think, wow, you know, I can go back to different points in my life and my family's life where things look pretty bleak. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with those three words, keep the faith. Because you do. You keep the faith and you get through those things and you move on to better things. Your thoughts, Scott?
Well, I think that how you respond to everything is really what it's all about. It's never what happens to you, because a lot of times what happens to you is completely out of your control. Now, sometimes you're involved in it, but ultimately it leaves your control. So your response is really what you control. And sometimes the response is really where the rubber meets the road. In these situations, because the response can be the redemption of whatever the problem was to begin with.
Right. It's very true. And you know, it's funny, we always look at people and think, wonder how they would respond in a certain situation. I want to talk just a second here. I think I should honor him a little bit about my brother-in-law.
Have you heard my interviews with
my brother-in-law, Dean Unger, that went home to be with the Lord this last early Monday morning. Dean was a character. Love him to death. He crawled out the window on a station wagon one day on Route 315 and climbed across the roof holding onto the rails, and his friend was driving. It was still dark in the morning heading to work, and he dropped his face down over the windshield in front of him. I mean, is that crazy or what? But Dean did bizarre. Dean was just fun, and he was always a jokester. He was always extremely athletic in all the things that he did. And you would think if anything ever happened debilitating to him that he would become a bitter, mean old guy. And about 15 years ago, he was in a very serious accident in Florida. He was on his bike. He biked a lot with his son, Adam. And one of those snowbird drivers pulled out, and Dean went right through his windshield off his bike. And from that point on, a lot of things started happening to his body. He had a mild heart attack. He'd had he developed type 1 diabetes, but the worst thing was he developed this very strange form of muscular dystrophy that literally took them 10 years to diagnose exactly what it was. It was so rare. And it was funny watching Dean, because this guy that had always been, he was a bodybuilder when he was young. He just really was all about his physical self. And as his body began to, he began to lose the ability to use his hands, his legs, everything started going. The interesting, he had to leave the job that he loved, very talented at what he did. But he just took it in stride. Honestly, I can honestly say, and his wife will tell you this, my sister Kathy, never heard this man complain about his condition, which is really unbelievable for anyone, especially in his, when he got to the point where he had to be literally be held on to take into the bathroom or sit up in bed, or, you know, he finally got to the point that he couldn't swallow anymore. And he, the last thing he had that he could do that was really fun was he loved eating, and he loved saying, I want this, I want that, you know. But then it got to the point where everything he had to be pureed just to get it down his throat. And it's funny because he always had a grin and a smile on his face when you talked to him. Always making a joke. Always couldn't wait to see what was going on in maybe the Super Bowl or whatever. And actually the last thing that he did was, and he was kind of not really conscious at the time, but he watched the Super Bowl. You know, he lived down below Tampa for 25, 30 years, and so for him to see the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl would have been great. But Kathy stayed with him and had it on in his room and at the hospital, and he passed right after the game. But he always stayed on top of what was going on, and it just, you say that it's our reaction to things what's important. He was pleasant to be around through that whole time, no matter how many times he fell down. I remember they were visiting several months back, and he would fight. I can't count how many times he fell when he was at my house, but he'd fall down. You know, he hit the side of the tub. He'd have a bleeding elbow and a skinned knee, and he'd come in the bathroom and he'd just be laying there laughing and saying, "Can you get me up?" I mean, you know, how degrading is that for a person, for us, when we get to that stage? We would think, but he never saw it that way. And you know, what a blessing, what a strength to be around. We, you know, a lot of us, we get a hangnail, we whine. Very, you know, any little thing bothers us, but he really took it in stride. And he really left a great example for all of us that know him, that look, if I go through difficult times, shame on me if I whine about it after watching what this man just went through. And but you know, it is that attitude, it's what we do. With everything going on, you know, Tim, I know your job, like everyone's job, has had a few curveballs in it.
Yeah.
And how do you take that as far as when it comes up? Are you angry? Are you?
When it first started, I was angry. As we were talking, coming up mid-April, I get to go back from 80% time to 100% time. Well, I'm going to miss having Fridays off. I mean, I've gotten to the point now, the last few weeks I've been coming here with you, I enjoy coming in here.
Uh-huh. So. And it's all the things that do happen with us. I think we are a reactionary people. And it's because when something arises, the first thing that many times we think of, what's the worst case scenario that was going to happen? And then we go from thinking that, what could happen, to that may be what's going to happen, and that's probably what's going to happen. But you know, in most situations, most things have a way of leveling themselves out and not being maybe as good as you thought they'd be, but they're not nearly as bad as you thought either. And
like I said, this whole thing, it's been a teaching experience.
I think it has.
I mean, for me, you know, reduced salary, I just learned to do without or be not as extravagant as I was. I mean, at work, it used to be, you know, you look forward to lunch because you went out for lunch because you got away for an hour. Now I take my lunch every day, and
that's probably been a good thing.
It has.
I know with even with school, as difficult as school has been, so frustrating for students, parents, teachers, and administrators, there's things that have come out of this too. I mean, parents are beginning to realize that their kids aren't always the I did my best angels they thought they were, and that, you know, given their own time, they will goof off, and they're finding that the teacher's job isn't always so easy. And some students thrive well in this situation. Most don't, to be perfectly honest. It's very hard to get them to do their own thing. But I think that it's kind of taught us, maybe it's opened some of our eyes up, not just as educators, but as parents, that, you know what, we really need to start teaching our young people better time skills and what they do with their time, so that when they get in a situation, they know they have to make the best use of their time and get it done. And, you know, there's always good things that come out of these things. Scott, how has the current situation affected you? And have you had any negatives? Because I've talked to you, and I bumped into, you here and talked. And it seems like the radio station has just kind of gone on, and nothing real, catastrophic has happened with you during this time of the pandemic. Am I missing anything?
No, nothing really has, which has been lucky for me. And, you know, it's... But I've seen it with a lot of people, which that's sad to watch. I think sometimes seeing things happen to other people are worse than if they happened to you.
Absolutely.
So I think when you see people who are having trouble, you know, paying the bills, or people who have lost their jobs because the businesses have closed, people who work in restaurants, which I knew a lot of those people, still do know a lot of those people whose tips have been cut back because you can only have so many people in a restaurant. I've noticed a lot of that, but personally, you know, really ever since it started, nothing has changed in my life except the changes that have come about that we all face, you know, wearing masks certain places,
absolutely.
Being a little careful, that sort of thing.
You know, it's funny, I've kind of noticed in the restaurant situation, and I know that someone's going to call in and say, not me, but those waiters and waitresses might be getting a little higher percentage than they were because people understand that.
Right.
That they're having a tougher time. And I did hear that the governor was going, said that we could now, as of what, today, start opening up buffets and things again, which is great. Anything to get these people back to work and keep them in work is very, very important. Some of the stuff doesn't make sense anyway, but I'm not going to be one to fight about that. I was telling Tim on the way in here, you know, we need to do what God has called us to do as a church, as a people, and continually do the best that we can at it, and not worry about what other churches, other people, other institutions are doing. Just constantly keep our eye on the mark and do what we're supposed to do. You know, if we share God's love with people, if we're kind to people, if we minister to people, if we grow deeper in our faith and in our walk, then we're going to be a useful tool when God needs us. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be that pastor that stands in the pulpit and screams doom and gloom to everyone, because that just isn't the truth. You know, if we look back through history and we look at this brief pandemic that we're having right now, first of all, everyone's saying the nation's fallen. I will tell you today, we are still the greatest nation in the world. We are still the freest nation in the world to this day. We're the freest nation. We have the most religious freedom. We are still the one nation in the world that has the most best opportunity for everyone. Now, there are situations that will come in and adjust that a little bit, depending on opportunity and whatnot. But I still firmly believe today that if you get up with a positive attitude and say, this is the goal I want to reach, and I'm going to systematically work towards that goal, we live in a country where that's obtainable. Certainly not if you weigh 350 pounds and want to be a jockey. That's a whole other story. but within your means and within what you naturally could be, we have, and that's not the way it is everywhere in the world. We don't have a government telling us how many kids we're allowed to have. We don't have a government telling us, you know, you fit this certain profile, you can only work in these industries. And we need to be very grateful, America. I mean, very grateful, the country that we're still in. And make sure we maintain those freedoms, but that only happens through us. You know, everyone, I keep seeing these posts out there, but everyone's saying, You know, they work for us. We don't work, you know, they don't, they're not our leaders. They actually are our representatives, which is true. But the only way that balance is going to be right is if the people that put them there make sure that they keep it a representative form of government. And it starts at the local level. And when we send people to Washington, as it were, those people are representing us. But it is our responsibility to make sure they are representing what we expect them to when they go there. It is their responsibility to do what they said they would do. That's on them. But we're the ones that go to the polls. We're the ones that decide whether or not they're doing what they should or not. So before we start, as bleak as Washington can be, and before we go over that rail too far, I think we need to come back and remember that the buck stops with us, not with them. You know, we still have a representative form of government, and we need to make sure that it stays that way. But there is no reason that today in Marion, Ohio, or wherever you're hearing this, Richwood or Prospect or any of the other cities in the area that are hearing this, there's no reason that if you decide that there's something you want to do with your life, there's a goal you want to obtain, nothing is stopping you from doing that. Nothing except things would be the obvious. I am not going to go out and tomorrow and say my goal is to be drafted by the Lakers. It just didn't going to happen. No. But you know, if I have a goal of anything else that within abilities, I can work and do that. I mean, there's so many stories. I would challenge people to look at people throughout history that came from very meager beginnings. I can't help but thinking about Ben Carson. I mean, this is a kid that grew up in the projects with nothing. And, you know, he's a world-renowned brain surgeon. Kid grew up in the projects with nothing. I mean, but he decided what he was going to do, and he did it. And his mother was there to guide them and say, you guys don't need to live here your entire life. You're going to be something. And I think that's... Years ago, I was working in South Linden in Columbus for a long time. When I was a very young man, I took care of a bunch of rental properties. And at the time, it was getting to be a pretty depressed area. And it wasn't the best place to raise a family. And I remember this father and mother that lived right in the middle of it. And they lived in half of a duplex. And I admired them so much. The dad would sit there doing homework with the kids. I heard them, you know, encouraging, correcting, do all the things you're supposed to do as a parent, and really wanting those kids to have better lives. You know, so much of what we see at home in our children and in the issues that we see with them today is because the parent has given up on life. If the parent gives up on life, what's the kid supposed to do? Where's his attitude supposed to be? But if the parent says, you know what, there's a way for you and I'm going to help you get there, as their job as a parent is to do, then that young person will thank them unbelievably one day for the guidance they gave them growing up, which allowed them to be successful, allowed them to have a good life. But it's very easy to pull the woe is me card, or, you know, I'm here because I've been treated unfairly. Well, you know what? Scott, have you ever been treated unfairly?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course you have.
I don't know anybody who hasn't.
I have never, ever heard you say, Steve, I've just been treated so unfairly. This has happened. I've never heard that. And why? Because you don't dwell on the, you know what, that happened. Okay, I'm moving on. I don't have time for that to pull me down and waste my life worrying about the fact I was treated unfairly. Oh, well. I know many times I've been treated horribly unfairly, but at the time, nothing pops to my head because I don't dwell on it and I don't live by it. Tim, I think you've been in the same situation many times, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, stuff happens, you just move along.
Yeah, what person hasn't? But you pick up and you go on. And that's why I'm going to read that once again, because I think it makes so much sense. Rather than being consumed with your problems, be consumed with the joy of what God is doing with you through them. Wow, it doesn't say to just forget them. It says be consumed with the joy of how God's going to basically mature you through them. And there is an amount of maturity that comes through difficulty when it's handled right. And when you handle them right, and when time after time after time, those momentary setbacks become large steps ahead, when another momentary setback would appear on the horizon, you kind of say, "That's okay. I'm not worrying about it. It doesn't have the effect that it did before. You're not so devastated." I've heard people, you know the old saying, when you find out you lose your job, take it with joy because another door is going to open. Well, a lot of people say, well, that's easy to say, but you get notified you lost your job. You know what? The truth of the matter is, I have a mighty God that I trust, and I give that to Him, and I truly do believe another door is going to open. I've walked it in my life, and I've lived it, and I've seen it. I talked to a friend the other day. This is very interesting. They bought a property, and they're going to put a church on this property. And it had, and I knew the property, and I always wondered how they got around that. It had its own sewage system, the property did. And the sewage system was so bad that it was just going to be astronomical to fix this thing. Well, they went ahead and did this thing, and then they called in. They wanted $75,000 just to repair the sewage system. And then it was going to have weekly inspections by the city and whatnot. And he told me, he says, "You're not going to believe this." A friend of his, who I happen to know, knew a guy that went all over the country updating and modernizing sewer systems, private sewer systems. Well, it so happened, this guy's wife starts coming to their church. He was not a church-going man, but he said, "Let me help you out." And he went out, and they redid this whole sewer system. And they came in and told him that, "We only want you to pay for materials. We got all the labor, $5,000. But not only that, for the last 2 years, he has gone out every week, twice a week, and checked the levels on that and kept record of it for them to turn in to the county and never charge them a dime for it. Now, those are the kind of things that when you trust and you have faith, that those happen. They really do. And I've seen them happen over and over and over again. But we have to be willing to step up, trust God, and do what we're supposed to do. I've often said this too, that I don't believe that God's going to help someone when they're doing everything they shouldn't. Because why in the world would He want to help someone continue in the same pattern that they're in? If you're in a destructive pattern and you're asking God's help, He's going to say, "You know what? Yeah, I'll help you get out of that pattern, but I'm not going to help you to make you think it's okay to stay in that pattern." Right?
Right, that's the way it works.
If your kids come home and they got all F's on the report card and it's because they're goofing off, do you pat them on the back and say it's okay, call the teacher and say, "Leave my kid alone," and then take them to McDonald's? Unfortunately, some parents might, but it's not a good thing. But if the parent says, "Whoa, wait a minute, I know you're upset, this teacher yelled at you, you're in all this trouble, you gotta stay in for recess, but you did it, and I'm gonna help you out of it, but you're gonna have to follow me and do what I say to do." And it's that thing of personal responsibility. Own your mistakes. I mean, if you make a mistake, be honest about it and say it. "Look, I made a mistake. I know that when I was in business for years in construction, every now and then mistakes happen. And I knew right away that I got to eat this one. And sometimes it was very hard to eat, but it was my fault because ultimately the buck stopped with me." Yeah. And you do that. But it's hard to see that today because most people are looking for the quickest and best way out. And I don't think it's the best way for you. I hear more people saying, "Boy, we need God right now." Okay, we need God right now. Have you bothered to get up on Sunday morning and go to a church and learn about God? Have you bothered to open your Bible and read about God? I mean, if you think we need that.
It's more than it says we need God right now. It's that we need God all the time.
All the time.
Not just right now.
Yeah. And I think that I think we're a long way from being ruined in this country, but I do believe that we have to decide that we're going to be salt and light. Scott?
I would say so. You know, I think at some point, no matter what bad is happening, you have to look at what good you have going on in your life.
Absolutely.
You know, when you look back at bad times, they really, once you get some space in between, they're not all that bad. And a lot of times, something that was really bad led to something really good.
Absolutely.
That if you really look back at it, you say that was the turning point that took some burden off my chest that was there for a long, long time, got rid of it, and allowed me to move forward in a different direction.
Scott, you know what I think one of the most healing things we can do for any situation is to make a decision. Because half the time, we don't, you know, should I do this? Should I do that? You make that decision. I'll use a good example. Years ago, through a recession and a lot of things, I had a business that was tanking. And I knew it, and I was fighting and fighting to keep it open. I was a wreck, a physical wreck, trying to keep everything floating, trying to keep employees, trying to keep things paid, to avoid making that tough decision. But when the day came that it was inevitable that I made that tough decision to shut everything down, it was like a burden was lifted off me that was unbelievable. Had a lot to deal with in the shutting down process. And, you know, there were wounds and stuff there, but there was a decision made, and I could finally see some light. Before, all I'm looking at is darkness. And I think that, you know, everything's that way in our life. You know, we make a decision, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I can't live this way any longer. I'm going to step out and do what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, if you're praying to God and you're following the Lord, and he lays out on your heart what to do, just do it. Parents, I talked to parents today that are literally afraid to discipline their children. When I say discipline, I'm not talking about beating them, okay? I don't want anyone to get that idea. But are afraid to discipline their children because they're afraid they'll walk out of their lives, or they'll go live with the other parent. Or, you know what? You do what's right and do it right every time, and it will not return void. It never does. It might temporarily look that way. I tell parents a lot of times, sometimes when you'll see a situation of divorce and you've got one parent that is trying their best to raise this these kids to be responsible, and another parent that's spoiling them rotten just so they'll like them and want to be, you know, it's using your kids vicariously to get at each other. And I tell that parent that's trying, I say, look, the day's going to come when they're going to recognize that you had their best interest in mind and you really loved them. And it does. That day always comes. You know, when they stop and they grow and they mature a little, they look back and go, wow, you know, mom was not letting me do that because she cared about me. If dad would have really cared about me, he wouldn't have. It was interesting. I have kids that come to Pizza with Pastor, teenagers, and I just let them talk. We sometimes things are semi-structural, but I give them a chance to talk. And this one girl told a friend of hers one day, she said, boy, your mom and dad really love you, don't they? And she goes, what do you mean? I'm always in, because the girl was upset, she was in trouble. She said, I wish my parents loved me. And then she followed it with this, they let me do anything I want. And she was telling the girl that didn't get to do, I wish my parents loved me like they love you, but mine don't care enough to make me do what I'm supposed to be doing. Isn't that amazing? That even a younger teenager can see that. Now, they'll fight you against it because they want to do what they want to do. But ultimately, they, in their heart, they know there's a reason why you're saying no. And it shows them love. The Bible says, who the Lord loves, he disciplines. And we do discipline people. There are parameters. People grow, and it's through that discipline and understanding. Well, I guess I can't go there. I may not understand or agree now, but I guess I have to follow that. And I think in the long run, people will be glad when they do that. Did you have much discipline growing up, Scott, or were you one of those good kids?
You know, I really didn't have a whole lot of discipline, but I knew my parameters. Mm-hmm. So it really was never... you know, if you do this, this.
But it was obvious what they were.
Oh yeah, I mean, I knew what you could do and what you couldn't do, and I'm never really sure if that's the personality or if that's where you grow up, because you can have two kids who grow up with the
same
parents.
You're right. Some kids are like, wow, the most well-behaved kid in the world, and another kid just pushes every. James Dobson wrote a book years ago called Dare to Discipline, and he was the psychologist at UCLA initially, I think, when he wrote that book. But it was just, look, you know, he recognized those kids. You've got the strong-willed child, and you've got the child that's easy, but you don't let up on the strong-willed child. And his book went through of how to deal with these kids. But it's so important that they do know discipline. You know, if you don't teach a kid parameters, he's not going to be able to hold a job, because he's not going to realize there's parameters. There's someone that they have to answer to. Like, what do you mean? You can't tell me I have to do that. I quit. Or, you know what I mean? I didn't get my way, so I'm leaving. I think I've hung out in some pretty bad situations before in jobs, because I was told that you stick things out. I was taught that. And unfortunately, there were jobs that I was horribly taken advantage of, and even by people that I should have been able to trust. But at the same time, I gave it all I had, and it ultimately did come to a head in those situations, and you're not there. But yeah, I think that we do have, like you said, two kids in the same family. Why are they so far apart? My kids are all different. But when it comes to understanding discipline and how they discipline their children and guide them, they're all pretty much the same, even though the kids themselves are very different. What do you think, Tim?
Your kids?
No, discipline-wise, with you growing up.
Oh, yeah, there was, you know, son and daughter. The daughter was, you say, boo. She gets all emotional, tore up, and the son says, yeah, I'm going to do what I want to do. But, you know, you have to rein them in and say, no, this is it. This is what you get to do.
And I know both of them.
If you do more than that, then there's consequences to be had.
I know both of them, and they both are very hard workers and very responsible.
Yes, they are.
And that's where that comes from. I truly believe, I know there's a lot of pain and despair out there. There's a lot of parents that got kids that are just really out in left field. They're out running with the wrong kids and daring the parents to do anything about it. And I don't mean to make light of their situation, like it's not difficult, but it is. But I think that as a parent, you put your foot down and say, this is the way it's going to be. And if they go off the deep end, that's not on you. You know, if they go off and do their own thing. But at least they know that when they're in your house, under your roof, in your presence, it's they're going to do what you said to do. And we desperately need to teach that. You know, and that is not negativity. That's being that salt and light. Because you want them to do well. You want them to be responsible. Sometimes in our country, pleasures have risen above everything else as being a right. I don't remember any time in history when entertainment and pleasuring ourselves was treated as something that was at the top of the necessity level. Not that we're all supposed to be hardworking and drawn out. I don't mean that. But I know that in America, what we want and things we want to do, going out to dinner, can be right up here. And when people list their bills out and go down the list, there's things they need to be doing that are below the going out to eat and doing X and X. You know what I mean? Friday night, you know. Who did the song, Everybody's Working for the Weekend? Remember that song?
That's right.
But it's kind of true.
Loverboy.
It really is.
Is it Loverboy?
Loverboy.
Everyone's working for the weekend. And honestly, we need to be working for our responsibility. And if we're able to go do something on the weekend, so be it.
Absolutely. Well, we reached the end here. It was a great show today. It blew right by. Should let people know the Pastor Spot is a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. It airs live every Friday morning from 11:10 a.m. till 12 p.m., then repeat Sunday morning, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., and then Wednesdays from 3:10 until 4 p.m.
Come visit us at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Our number there, if you want to call, is 740-494-2222. We'll see you. God bless and take care.
To downgrade him in some way, And I think they're going to be shown up as not loyal and sour grapes, and they're not going to benefit by that behavior.
Phyllis, what is your favorite part of the convention? What do you like to do the best while you're here?
Well, my special has been the platform committee.